Network Automation Nerds Podcast.
Hello, welcome to Network Automation Nerds Podcast, a podcast about network automation, network engineering, Python, and other technology topics. I'm your host, Eric Cho. Today, I am super excited, and I don't want to waste any time because there's so much gold to be digged out of this person that I'm welcoming back from part one. So in part one, we talked to Russ White about kind of his career path and how he became so proficient in so many different fields. And if you missed that episode, I really, really encourage you to go back because it's going to be very relevant to what we're going to talk about in part two. In part two, we're going to talk about his recommendation on, people who just coming out of college, for example, people who's been kind of mid-career and or maybe just 3 to 5 years into their career, and people who's been, 10 plus years. What would be his recommendation on which direction to go? And I cannot wait to dive into this. I want to bring back a little bit of what you talked about, Russ. And you started with the why, right? You talked about your electronic background and eventually getting to routing, but you were never satisfied with just living in other people's reality bubble, should we say? They create these show commands and you're like, well, why does the show command do this? So I want to hear more about that. And why don't we start with, I guess people who just right out of college, right? Like, what would you recommend them do or learn, or what is the direction?
Yeah. So if you're right out of college, now, of course, this might be somebody who's just coming into the career field as well, right?
Yes.
Who's just starting.
Just starting.
Either way, I think the biggest thing that you need to do is to start building a mental map of everything. Find a way to model internally. Now, I use a model personally. I call the four things model. I've been writing on it,
yes,
packet pushers. And it's just my thing, right? I'm not saying it's the right thing. Don't ever take anybody's, you should do the right thing. The right thing is the OSI model. The right thing is the DOED model, TCP, whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever. Who cares? Do what works for you. But you do need to find a way to build a mental map. And by the way, this is not something that I intentionally did from the time I started in any of these fields. This is actually something that I encountered when I did my PhD.
Okay. In philosophy, nonetheless, right? Yeah, in philosophy.
And that's actually what happened was I'm talking to my major professor before he was my major professor.
Yeah.
And I'm like, but I don't know anything about philosophy. He's like, look, if we can get you a mental map of philosophy, then you'll be able to take all the philosophy bits and integrate them into what you already know. And I'm like, what's a mental map? What do you mean by that? What are you talking about?
Yeah.
And so he goes off on this thing about, you have to understand the basic branches. Like in philosophy, it's really the basic branches and the history.
Okay.
It's who is the philosopher? Who are they reacting to? And how are they reacting to that person? Which then develops their way of seeing things. Socrates is all about asking questions. And then Plato's like, okay, enough with the questions. We need to figure out how we find truth.
Yeah.
Right. You can ask questions all day long, and you can tear down everybody else's idea of truth. But what are you doing to find truth for yourself? What is your definition of truth? And then so Plato does this, I'm going to talk about the forms and this, that, and the other, which is a lot more than you think it is. And, and everybody remembers Plato for the Republic. But in reality, his more important work is followed with the law, because he tried to apply the Republic in the real world and it didn't work.
Okay.
So he ended up writing the law to say, this is really the way things work. So it's better. Anyway, and then you get Aristotle, right? And Aristotle's like, all this knowing about truth is great, but how do individual people live? So you're just understanding, what is the purpose? What is this person asking questions about?
Yeah.
How are they answering them? And why are they asking those questions? And that's kind of how you build a mental map of philosophy, is going through the history and things like, okay, before Descartes, everybody was worried about ontology. What is truth? After Descartes, everybody's concerned about epistemology. How do I know truth? And if you might read anything in the modern world in philosophy, it's all about how do I know truth? I mean, everything is about justified true beliefs and warrant and all this other stuff. And so just understanding those kinds of things builds a mental map. I can take a single philosopher I've never heard of before. I can place them inside this historical timeline. I kind of have an internal, I mean, I have it written down too, so I don't have to memorize it all and say, okay, where do they fit? Who are they reacting to? Like what are they coming from? Okay. Same thing in the networking world.
Yeah.
Right. This is the four things model for me is the way, reason I do this is because I'm like, okay, what is the problem I'm trying to solve?
Yeah.
Right. What is the full range of possible solutions and how does this particular protocol solve that problem?
Right.
Because there's no new ways of solving these things. All these things are being solved the same way they've always been solved.
And the you talked about the compromises that each of your solutions making.
Yes, exactly. And so that's the mental model. That's the mental map, right? Is you kind of build a mental map of what you're going to, it's like building an outline for a book. You're going to write a book, you build an outline. Why do you build an outline? So you can get the flow, so you can get the pieces, you make sure you cover everything. It's the same thing with a mental map and networking or engineering of any kind. You're just building like an outline, basically. And using like a mind map piece of software or something like that would be really good for doing this. I've never done it, but I think that'd be a really good thing to do because, you know, you're like sitting there going, okay, if I look at routing, what is routing really trying to solve?
Right.
What are the fundamental questions I need to answer here?
Yeah.
And that's all it is. And so once you build that mental map, the cool thing is that you can just apply it to everything, like everything. So coming out of college, if I were in that position, I'd be trying to build a mental map, one, and two, I'd be trying to get hands-on experience.
Okay.
I'd be in the lab. I'd be like backing up my mental map
with experiments.
And understanding the theory with the experience.
Yeah. Right?
And not just doing other people's labs. Like, okay, in theory, BGP should react this way.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to try it. Right? Let's go see what it does. Like, let's not just accept that that's what it should do. Let's go see what it does.
Yeah.
Right? How do you learn how BGP converges? You set up BGP networks in the lab, and you do in very stilted, very weird topologies that don't exist in the real world.
Yeah.
That force BGP to act in certain ways. And then once you've done that, you can take out links and take out speakers and go, oh, I can actually see the process step by step by step. And now I understand it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this is totally unscripted too, Russ. But see, like I dig out this book, of the shortness of life, just because you were all talking about philosophy. I'm like, okay, I'm now inspired to read this book because, as you could tell, like it's not even open, but but it's like right within reach. But no, I like that the mental model and you kind of it's kind of like the first degree, right? Like you eliminate everything else and just simplify it down into the first degree and say, what is the routing protocol trying to solve? In particular, how does BGP solve these, you know, issues that they're trying to solve?
Right. And look for patterns, right?
Look for patterns.
ISIS and OSPF are very similar protocols. They're not the same. I always used to joke when I taught ISIS and OSPF in tech, I would like teach OSPF first. And I would get to the end of OSPF and I'd say, okay, now it's time to learn ISIS. Just forget half of everything you already know about OSPF.
Which half of it? Right. Every other line.
Every other line. Now you know ISIS.
Yeah.
But really, I mean, it's not quite that simple. But still, like, it is. They're similar enough that if you think about how SPF works, right, and think about how flooding works, then you can really understand, like, what's going to happen. You can take a network diagram and say, this link fails. I know exactly how this is going to converge.
Yeah.
I can build a time chart. I can build a timeline and say at time one, it's going to do this. At time two, it's going to do this. At time three, it's going to do that. Now, there may be changes because things change and blah, blah, blah. But generally speaking, I know how this is going to converge by looking at it. I don't need to actually see it happen. But backing it up with things that doing it in the lab is really good because then you can integrate that knowledge into what you're doing. So that's kind of, I think, that's the two things that I think I would be focused on if I were just coming out of school or something like that. College degrees tend to be much more focused than they used to be, for better or worse. They tend to be much more single issue things. I'm going to teach you to code Java.
Yeah.
That's a college degree nowadays, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's...
And you're teaching at University of Colorado, so you have firsthand experience or...
Yeah, and I'm contrary to the whole thing.
Yeah.
I teach a master's level class, and it's basically a mental map class. That's what it is. It's a, I'm going to throw all sorts of information at you about lots of things so that you have an idea of what IoT is, so that you have an idea of how encryption works. All I'm just going to throw everything at you. And so it's like 14 weeks of total fast as you can go learning every topic. And of course, every student's going to have some topics they already know.
Yeah.
So they can relax that week. And then, so yeah. So that's basically that course is just let's just go and hit every field in network engineering. All of them. Everything from everything. Right.
Yeah.
I'm not teaching modulation. I mean, I went into modulation principles and stuff in this new book, which is actually something I've never done before, believe it or not.
Okay. Well, I want to talk about your double click on what you're talking about before on your advice, though, because I think let me play devil's advocate a little bit, because I think the problem of doing what you said before, Russ, is, it's so when you're a new grad, you're under pressure to actually perform on the job, right? You need something that you could, like a command line, like how do you construct a PGP neighbor? These are the four lines that you form and attach into Cisco, Juniper, or whatever. And going down to the fundamentals, you're spending all these time that may or may not be able to translate into your job for tomorrow. Yeah. So what would be your answer for that?
Yeah, so I'm contrary to everybody.
Okay.
all of my career advice is contrary.
It's Ross against everybody else.
I'm contrary to everybody about this. I think my perspective is that engineering is like, I actually have a presentation that I did for UT and I've done for USC and other places.
Okay.
And it's incorporated in the UC class as well. It's like engineering to many people is like a treadmill. The technology is thrown at you and you are on a treadmill trying to learn. Oh, Juniper came out with this new feature. I need to learn the commands for that. Oh,
yeah.
Cisco came out with a new feature. I need to go, or there's this new thing called EVPN. I need to go learn the configuration commands for Juniper, Cisco, et cetera, et cetera. And what I really want to do is if you build the mental map, you jump off the treadmill. You stop learning the commands.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, it's a lot of work. And yes, it takes 5 to 10 years at least. Right, to do it. But once you've done it, you're off the treadmill. And instead of somebody saying, oh, there's this new thing, EVPN, let's go learn how to configure it, you say, oh, what problems does that solve?
Right. Or how does that fit into that?
How does that fit into the larger picture?
Right.
How is it? So I already know there's only 4 solutions to this problem. Which one did they choose? And then when you approach a configuration, your question becomes, all right, if I'm configuring BGP, I know that BGP does not have automatic neighbor discovery. Well, some do now, but typically for an eBGP section, most of the time, in inter-provider connections,
don't want to do that.
Yeah, exactly. You don't want to do that, right?
Yeah.
So now I need to know, I need to query the configuration, right? How do I go about configuring this? Rather than having the commands memorized,
yeah,
you're learning what questions you need to ask and what you need to look for in the CLI.
Yeah.
And it turns the entire situation around. And once you do that, then you freed yourself up to learn new protocols very quickly and to expand your horizons. So I would always begin with build the mental map. I know it takes time. I know it's hard. When you're configuring stuff, drive your coworkers crazy with, yeah, I see this configuration, but why?
Yeah.
Why do we configure BGP that way?
Right.
And go look it up, right?
Yeah.
Go find out. Don't just go, oh, that's what the command does. No. What does that do in BGP? What does that do in OSPF? Go find the specification. Okay. If you're crazy enough, go grab a copy of FR routing and find that command in the command structure.
Yeah.
And figure out what bits it twiddles in the configuration files, and then what happens in the code when you make that change.
Mm-hmm.
Like really seriously, then you'll understand like what the protocol is doing. And once you understand that, then you can turn the situation around from how do I configure this to what am I trying to get done?
Yeah.
Right? What's my goal here? Now
that's
that I have a goal.
That's a great point because, I mean, back then when you and I started, or you started much more earlier than I did, but we didn't have FR routing, we didn't have Quagga.
That's right.
We didn't have like all these lab equipment that are virtualized. We actually have to haul in like the AG, what is it, AGP?
AGS Plus.
Yeah, AGS Plus, like those white, hunky, like it's about, it sounded like it's about to take off from my basement, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, so now you have all these tools, DPTK, as you mentioned, that are just excellent in, you know, trying things out without a lot of risk. So that becomes a, you know, I'm not saying it's free, like free as in free of effort, but it's a lot easier.
It takes time. Yeah. It still takes a lot of time, clearly. It still takes a lot of effort. You have to learn things, but that's okay. Again, the first part of my career, I would be focused on flipping the script.
Okay.
Getting from configuring things by rote to understanding how asking the questions that help me learn, do the configuration. And by the way, this drives me nuts when I'm in interviews. I've actually had people ask me, if you were on a Juniper router and you wanted to make BGP do this, what configuration command would you use?
Oh my God. I'm like, it unleashes the wrath.
Yeah. You know, is there no search engine that I can use here? Like, why would I want to memorize that? Right.
Yeah.
Like, because it's going to change in 5 years anyway, or it should change. And frankly, when you get to intent-based networking and automation, you really don't care about those configuration commands.
Or you just add ChatGPT or whatever, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, I don't need to know that stuff. And so, like for the CCIE, I do, because the CCIE is all about speed. Fine.
Yeah.
Let's get past the CCIE. But once you're past the CCIE, get yourself to the point where you are beyond learning the commands and you're learning the protocols and the whys so that you can ask questions and figure out what the configuration should look like, what you expect to look for. That's my, if you're young in this, in you're young in the field, that's where I would start. That's really where I would start.
Well, is that the same advice? Would you change anything? I mean, I sense a little bit of a tweak when you say get past the CCIE, right? So for people who's, I don't know, 3 to 5 years into their career, so maybe they've done a little.
Maybe 8 to 10 years even.
Let's
not pressure people into thinking they have to be done at 3 to 5 years.
Okay.
Right? Some people might be. I don't know. I'm just saying, I don't want to pressure anybody and say, if you're 5 years in and you haven't done this, then you really stink. No, it's not the point.
I'll be in that category, right? Like 5 years in, I'm still like trying to pass my CCIE. That's a fact, right?
Yeah. That's fine. Yeah. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. And it wasn't 5 years for me. I don't think. Yeah. I think it was much longer than that. I have no idea what it really was. But again, I was raised asking why. So it's much, you know, I've never done the pure configuration thing in my life. It's never been that way for me. So anyway, when you get beyond that though, my thing would be to add breadth.
Okay.
Right? Read philosophy. Read business. Get out of your comfort zone. Read crypto.
Yeah.
Like, you know, learn what other people do for a living and how they do it.
Yeah.
Really broaden out. And that's not going to help you. That is really not going to help you specifically in your networking career. But there's more to life than your career. There's being a whole person, right?
Right.
You want to be a whole person.
For sure.
To be a whole person, at some point you've got to look up from the workbench out the window and say, oh, you know, there's grass out there. If you walk outside, the graphics are incredible. Like the DPI rate is so much better than it is on the screen. Just saying.
Like instead of doing virtual reality, you actually take off the glass and you can actually touch this.
Yeah. So there needs to be a definite point in your career where you kind of turn and you say, okay, now I've built the mental map and I've encountered 2 or 3 new protocols and I felt very comfortable at being able, or 2 or 3 new networks, and I felt very comfortable at like understanding how they're going to converge without actually having to work on them, right?
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, this is something that's really cool you can do. You can actually go look at other people's networks. Facebook will sometimes post a research paper. Now, that's not their current network.
Sure.
That's some older network.
Sure.
Don't let them fake you out and think that's what they can do.
With thousands of lines of connectivity. Whatever.
Yeah. And just think to yourself, you know, like if you see an undersea map of a large provider network, you can be like, you know, how would I design BGP?
Yeah.
What would I do to make it run on that network? And then compare to what they've done as much as you can. And like bolster yourself, gain confidence in your own skill set. And once you're to the point where you have fairly good confidence, spread out, like learn crypto, like learn security, learn app security, learn to code, learn, I don't know, philosophy, learn stuff, get out and learn stuff.
Yeah.
Because the more stuff you know like that, the more effective you're going to be as a person in a wider range of environments. And soft skills, you know, although Mike Bouchon hates that term. He doesn't like the word soft skills. He calls them superpowers.
Yeah, superpowers. What's your superpower? Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I do enjoy listening to, I think I enjoy listening to the podcast for, you know, the Hedge podcast so much is because of the breadth that it brings, right? Like, I especially enjoy the forum type of, like a panel type of discussion, right? Because everybody brings a little bit on. I mean, the last episode I listened to was for network automation, right? And then you have, I think it was Yvonne who was saying, do you even need network engineering, right? Like, I don't think she specifically said that, but she's just like, okay, this thing carried us for so long and maybe it's time to just move on or whatnot, right? So that actually brings a whole new perspective to me. I'd love to hear your thoughts about that.
Oh, well, yeah, I think there'll always be network engineers.
Okay.
I just do. I mean, it's like electronics engineers. There'll always be electronics engineers. But when I first started in electronic engineering, the electronic engineers were in the field.
Yeah.
Now they're in laboratories and offices. They're not in the field anymore for the most part.
Right.
And the same thing with car mechanics, right?
Mm-hmm.
Growing up, we grew up and it was like, okay, we need a car. So we go down to the state auction and buy a car and it'd be like, you get it home and you're like, no, the head's got to be pulled. It's leaking oil or something. So we'd actually rip the engine down, you know, and put it back together. And those kinds of people still exist.
Yeah.
But they're just more rare than they used to be.
Yeah.
Most car work nowadays is done in an office, honestly, by some engineer who's sitting there designing. If this happens, I'm going to have it spit out this code.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. That's the real engineering work that happens. And then the guy sitting there working on the car, the woman working on the car, whatever it is, they're going to say, well, I get this code. So I go look at this manual. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's not necessarily as much engineering. That's more operational work. Right.
Right. Right.
And so the engineering still happens. We'll still need network engineers. It's just a matter of where it happens.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. I mean, I remember trying to turn off my like change oil light the other day and I looked into it and it wasn't like before, like you punch in some kind of, you know, trick punches of like buttons, but it's, you know, you do these ODB2 like things that you plug in and you use your mobile phone to turn off. So I think that goes back to what you were talking about, how we will always need this this context, but they may happen differently. And like what Steve Jobs was saying, right? We still need, like back when the car was first invented, it was all trucks. Well, we still have trucks, but now we have sedans and SUVs. And so the people who are working on trucks, it's a very limited amount of people. So maybe same thing is applicable for network engineering.
Yeah. And I also don't want to make it sound like network engineering is going to move strictly into hyperscalers and stuff like that, because that's not true, I don't think.
Right.
I think network engineering, like, again, we have people who work on cars, not just for pleasure, but for a living, who are real technicians on the car side still. They're not as common as they used to be, but there are still people out there who rebuild engines. I mean, in corner shops, there are still people out there who build race cars in corner shops.
Right.
They still do this stuff and they still understand the engines really well. They don't all work for auto manufacturers, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Networking is going to be the same thing. There may be fewer companies, and actually I think there's a pushback now against the cloud. It's starting to happen. I think we're starting to see the pushback against the cloud.
Yeah, not everything could move to the cloud.
Yeah, exactly. And I think we're starting to see a bit of pushback. And I think that, you know, most companies will still have network engineers. They just may be fewer.
Right.
They just may be, you know, higher level and fewer, or whatever you want to say, which then poses the problem of how you build these people.
Mm-hmm.
Because that is an issue, right? When you have fewer of them and they work in an office.
And they need a lot more breadth, right? Because now you have the overlays and underlays.
Yeah. And so how do you build those people, right?
Yeah.
That's always a hard question. I don't know the answer to it most of the time. Because college education doesn't always get you there. You know, certifications don't always get you there. And so, right. So where are modern, like if you look at a car manufacturer today, where do the people who work on, who design engines come from?
Yeah.
Right? They come out of graduate programs, sure. But there's fewer opportunities for somebody to go to a corner garage and rip down a, or in their own garage and rip down an engine.
Yeah.
And learn how it works. So there's a smaller pool of people from which to draw to do that.
But the knowledge required for that smaller pool is much deeper. So how do you short circuit the 15 to 20 years that required to get there and get there faster?
I don't know the answer to that. That's hard to me. That's a hard question. So, you get to a point in your career, you should learn to write. You should learn to speak. You should learn to like go speaking engagements. You should learn to mentor people. You should pick up other skills beyond just the networking skills, network engineering skills. And that's kind of the turning point to me. That's like second stage of your career is to do that stuff. So that's kind of the way I see career progression. Like if I'm interviewing somebody who's just out of college, my primary questions are going to be around, are they the type of person that's going to ask why?
Mm-hmm.
Or are they just going to spit configuration commands at me? Like,
right.
What is their personality? That's my main thing.
Okay.
When they get beyond 5 to 10 years, then I'm less interested in do they know how to configure stuff and more interested in, tell me about the last white paper you wrote. Tell me about like...
I would have failed on that.
or some other things. You know, like for you, a podcast, right?
Tell me
about your podcast.
Well,
right?
Thank you.
but I'm just saying, you know, what is your communication skills? I'm trying to get at your communication skills. I'm trying to get at your other skills, your superpowers.
Right.
More so than your basic network engineering skills.
Right.
And of course, I don't. I'm actually thinking about doing a thing on interviewing skills for Pearson. I've been kicking it around for a long time and I need to go do it. I need to do the slides and do everything.
Yeah.
Because I don't interview like most people do either. I mean, I'm contrary to everything most of the time. it's just not a thing with me.
We could tell by the last hour of your talk. You're just like, it's me and there's everybody else.
Yeah. There's me and there's everybody else. That's right. Yeah. Yeah. That's okay. I don't care.
Yeah. That's okay. Yeah. That's okay. I buy that. I mean, I have this book called Soft Skills by John Somers. I mean, mm-hmm. obviously there's some other things that happen with his attitude and so on. But I mean, that book itself really helped me as far as just, branching out and a lot of what you talked about on, your first code is going to suck, but just go learn it nonetheless, right? It's going to add to your dimension.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Don't be afraid to ask questions. Hey, when I worked for TAC, when I first came into Cisco TAC, the way it worked was we had certain people we knew everything. Like we had this guy who was the,
like your SMEs. Yeah.
Well, we had the guy who was the ISIS coder. There was one ISIS coder in all of Cisco when I was in TAC. He was the only guy.
Yeah.
And he's a nice enough guy. I like him a lot. I still talk to him today. He's really cool. But, or like Tony Lee. Tony Lee was well known for this as well. Tony Lee was like the router architecture dude because he designed the first silicon switching engine for the 7500.
Oh, wow.
You would email these people and you would know that it was going to come back. The answer was going to come back with a lot of cuss words and a lot of anger.
Yeah, things that you can't repeat on the show today.
Yes.
Yeah.
But you were going to get an answer.
Yeah.
And so you just put your fireproof suit on and you go do it.
Yeah.
So what if I ask a stupid question? Like, right. I'm not going to know it's stupid unless I ask, right?
Yeah.
And if I get back a really nasty answer, well, deal. It's okay.
Yeah.
It's life. And you just go on. You move on. And, I'm actually friends with those people today. I kind of consider Tony Lee to be an acquaintance. I know Tony pretty well. I've met him here and there. And yet I've gotten some really bad emails from Tony Lee. And that's okay. I asked stupid questions and he gave me the answer. And, he wasn't happy about having to answer it. And that's cool. I understand. He was busy. He's doing stuff. I got it. It's fine.
Yeah.
And so, Hank Schmidt, who was the ISIS guy, from very funny stories about Hank and emails from Hank and stuff. But he's a great guy. I still talk to him. And, you just have to put your fireproof suit on and just go do stuff. And it just is what it is. You can't be a shrinking violet. You got to be willing to ask stupid questions and just let it be.
I would say, I mean, I agree to that, but I think in order to build out that resiliency and in order to build out that bulletproof mindset that you just mentioned, for me, it took many, many years.
This is not an overnight thing.
And it took a lot of small wins, right? Like it took me to be multidimensional so that when I get, you know, knocked down on one and I still fall back on, I don't know, my family and, you know, my mm-hmm. daughters, I mean, like, they always love me and, you know, it doesn't matter how many stupid questions I asked. And for sure, I've asked my share of stupid questions.
Yeah, of course. I mean, the great thing is to go ask your daughter, like, ask them the same question you ask this really smart person. And they go, I don't know, Dad. And you say, see, maybe it wasn't a stupid question.
Yeah, there's one other person or two other person. I have two daughters so that are in the same boat. And we're just like hug each other and go rest on some grass or something, right? Like you said. Yeah,
exactly. Whatever.
Keep going. Unconditional love.
Yeah. I mean, it's like if you decide to write and people are like, oh, but it's so much work and oh, I'm going to get really torn up by the editor. Good. I'm happy.
Yeah.
Like, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Like the first couple of books I wrote, you should have seen them. Oh, you should have seen my dissertation. If my feelings got hurt by red ink, I would be totally a little puddle of crying on the floor, you know. But hey, I don't know. It makes me a better writer. That's okay.
Yeah, for sure.
That's their goal, is to make you a better writer, to make the text better. Good. You know?
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah, I think I read this on Gary Vee's blog post or Twitter post on the other day where it's like, yeah, your first everything is going to suck, but if you don't go past that first one, you never get to your 100th one, where it's excellent.
That's right.
Yeah, so I totally roger with that. I think it's been a great session, Russ. I mean, I truly enjoy what you talk about, going back to the basics, the mind maps, and then adding breath later on. And you put the money where your mouth is, right? You got your PhD in philosophy and adding so much breath, and you know your trail of works is a proof to that. So I thank you again for sharing those knowledge.
Thanks for having me on, Eric. These are great podcasts, by the way.
Well, thank you. I mean, both of the listeners enjoyed it, I think.
Both of the listeners.
Yeah, exactly. I'm sure you waste your time to talk to like four people in total, but
I'm sure you have as many listeners as I do on the Hinge.
No, that's for sure not true.
I complain to Ethan all the time about the number of listeners I have on the Hinge, and he's like, yeah, but the market for packet pushers is like 100,000 people or a million people in the world. The market for your podcast is like 1,000 people, so don't complain.
No, but it's you know, 80% penetration, right? Like 80%, you know, saturated and it's 1,000, but you got high penetration. But
yeah, well, that's what he's always saying. He's always like,
no, it's true. It's
your
true.
Market's so small. What are you complaining about?
the denominator is small, but hey, your percentage of adaptation is high. So where can people find your work? Where can people follow you? I know we mentioned last episode, but do you mind just reminding us again?
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah. Rule 11 Nut Tech is the primary place that you can follow me. I'm on LinkedIn. Yep. You can PM me there. Most of the time, if it's an interesting question that's more than just a simple thing, I'm just going to give you my email address and you can email me from there. Because like I don't do social media very well. It's just not a thing with me. So Rule 11 Nut Tech, you can find most of my stuff. I cross-post everything I write there. I try to. Sometimes I forget, but I really try hard to cross-post everything there. And anything I'm teaching at Pearson or whatever, I try to post something there so that people know it's coming up.
Yeah. I mean, whenever you teach, I try to make time for it. And, you know, when the new podcast comes out, at least I'll read through the description and try to listen to it.
Yeah. I've been trying to post transcripts that are just done by a machine thing.
Yes.
I kind of forget sometimes to push all the right buttons. And then the way that the podcast service works is I have to wait like 3 days for the, and then I sometimes forget to go back and grab.
Click OK.
to actually grab the URL for the transcript and put it in show notes and everything. So I don't know. It's just one of those things.
Well, no problem. I mean, you know, a lot of these, it's not like you're getting paid, right? So, you know, thank you for all of these stuff. And like I said, whenever you teach, I listen. So thanks again for being on the show.
Yeah, thanks, Eric.
Thank you for listening to Network Automation Nerds podcast today. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and all the other major podcast platforms. Until next time. Bye-bye.